ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning, Integrity. So happy to be on board with you today.
The Artemis astronauts are soaking in the sights of Earth as they get closer to the moon.
So what are they getting up to while travelling?
And could you endure the rigours of space for 10 whole days?
Definitely not. I'm ABC science reporter Jacinta Bowler.
And I'm Belinda Smith. This is Artemis Explained, a daily podcast following the Artemis 2 mission to the moon
for science fiction on ABC Radio National.
All right, it was really great to wake up this morning and look out the window and see the full moon off the front of the vehicle. There's no doubt where we are heading right now.
All right, Jacinta, mission in under a minute. Go.
Let's go. Okay, so today's an exciting day. They have gotten closer to the moon than they are from Earth. So they are well on their way there. They're doing really well.
More than halfway.
Yeah. It's a much chiller day. They're kind of just in the spacecraft doing their thing. The astronauts are even scheduled in to get 8.5 hours shut-eye.
Oh, dream.
That's more than I had last night. So the first correction burn was cancelled, which just means that they are doing what they need to be and they're going in the right direction. They don't need to do any little checks. And they've confirmed that the astronauts will be the furthest humans have ever been from Earth. But as usual, there are some more waste dramas. This time it's not the toilet, but they kind of did forget to put a rubbish bin in here, and they've been trying to work out how to move different things to look after their trash, which is fun.
I feel like this podcast should be renamed Space Waste Explained.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem, right? If you're in a tiny little capsule and you can't get rid of anything and you have to reuse everything, you're going to end up with waste, whether that's poop or
packets.
There's just a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff, yeah. Now, something that has come down over the last day have been some pretty photos. So The astronauts are actually making good use of their gear up there. What have they sent back?
Yeah, so they've just released the first set of photos, and they are really, really beautiful. So one shows the whole Earth lit up by the sun. You can see auroras visible at both poles. Another one that they have is where the sun is kind of coming behind. It's half of the Earth is in the sun and half of it is in the shade, which is also really beautiful as well.
Okay, half day, half nighttime.
Yeah. The astronauts have said that they've really enjoyed seeing the Earth as it's kind of moving further away into the distance. And this morning when I was cycling in, I actually could see the moon because it was sunny, but the moon was still shining. And I just thought, wow, there's actually astronauts up there. They're on their way to the moon. And I mean, that's not something that you get to think every day. It was very cool.
Well, we can think that for the next few days as they keep their journey around the moon and then hopefully back again safely. But we've had lots of people emailing in about what life is like inside the Orion space capsule. Before we get into, you know, a day in the life, I'm interested in the capsule itself. What's it like? If you were a real estate agent and you were trying to sell it to me, how would you describe it?
Okay, so we're looking at a beautiful camper van, incredible views when you wake up in the morning. You can't go outside and you do have 3 roommates.
They come with the place.
And everything is absolutely chock-a-block with stuff.
Right. So I'm thinking cozy, open plan would be in it.
Open plan, yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the word where it's all modular or like?
Like a versatile floor plan.
Versatile, yeah.
Okay, so it's pretty small.
Yeah, it's really not big, Belle. It is 5 metres in diameter and 3 metres high. Although, obviously, height really doesn't mean much in space. 3 metres in length. Yesterday, we were watching the press conference, actually, and they had the astronauts there talking. They were passing their mics around. And Jeremy Hansen was like lying on a bunch of stuff. This man was just like shoved in the side of this thing. And it really goes to show just how little space there is in there for all 4 of these astronauts.
Now, as humans, we love naming things. I've named all of my bikes. What have the astronauts called their Orion capsule?
So this particular Orion capsule is called Integrity. The astronauts get to name it themselves, which they did at a news conference in September. Now, this is a very long tradition. Other capsules, for example, there was Eagle, like the Eagle has landed. Each different mission has its own capsule name. Integrity, the team said, it embodies the foundation of trust, respect, candor, and humility across the crew and the many engineers, technicians, scientists, and dreamers required for mission success.
Okay, and so inside the Integrity capsule, what's a day look like? When I think about life here on Earth, I wake up, My alarm is the sort of classic alarm that you get on your phone. What do they wake up to?
Yeah, they've been waking up to a different song every day. I can't believe I mentioned this yet. So today was In a Daydream by the Freddie Jones Band, and each day they have a different one that they get to wake up to.
That was today's wake-up call for the Artemis II crew aboard the Integrity spacecraft.
Okay, so they're woken up by the melodic styles of the Freddie Jones Band. When I wake up, first thing I want is coffee.
Mm.
Do they get coffee?
They do get coffee.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, they actually have lots of drinks, like a surprising number of drinks. Smoothies, lemonade, and very importantly, 5 different types of hot sauce, which you probably shouldn't drink, but I'm going to count in there anyway.
What are some of their menu items that they have on board?
Just hot sauce. No.
I mean, it's a good thing that toilet's working if that was the case.
Most of the meals are freeze-dried and they add water to it. They actually, there is a quite large variety of food that goes up there with them. And they also, what I really liked about this is there's something called a food warmer. So to be able to heat back up the food, there's like, it looks exactly like a briefcase. And inside of it is a hot plate. And then you put in the little parcel and then you just wait for it to heat up. And then you can put away your little briefcase.
Great. Thank you guys so much. Enjoy your lunch.
All right, so they eat meals, but what about snacks and things?
Certain days, they don't have time to pull out the briefcase and, you know, put water in and heat up food. And so there's actually quite a lot of tortillas eaten on the mission.
Really? Tortillas?
Yeah, so just, you know, like regular flour tortillas. They have 58 of them in this mission. So every astronaut gets...
It's just over 14 tortillas each.
Your maths are better than mine. So the reason why they do that, tortillas are particularly a good food because they don't crumb when you eat them. They just kind of like come off. So you're not going to have crumbs floating everywhere. They also are one of those ones where you can put a lot of different spreads or other foods on and you've got it in your hand. You've got one hand to do, you know, important space stuff and you've got one hand with the tortilla. Perfect space food.
When I go bushwalking, we take tortillas for that same reason.
There you
go. Portable, light. I'm basically an astronaut. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
All right. So they've got their food. They have to rehydrate a lot of it. And of course they get thirsty. And I imagine they would want a drink of water every now and again. Where does that water come from?
On the ISS, on the International Space Station, they have a system to be able to reuse the water, right? So it'll go in the toilet. It'll go out from their breath. And then it will actually come back around again. So they don't need to consistently bring up the whole amount of water that you would need for those astronauts that are there. On this mission, that's not the case. So they actually need to bring literally all of the water that they're going to be taking, and that is 240 kilograms of drinking water.
240 litres of water.
It's a lot of water, yeah. But, I mean, if there's anything you want to not forget, it's water, I think. That and oxygen, which they 90 kilograms of oxygen.
Wow. Okay, that's quite a lot of weight. I guess they are fundamental to staying alive, and you can't, you know, crack a window when you're out in space.
No.
Get some fresh air in there. Another fundamental part of being alive, how do they go to the toilet?
Yeah, so we've mentioned some of the issues of the toilet, but I don't think we've actually talked about the toilet itself. So it's very small. It's under the floor. So you kind of like lift up this little hatch and then it's a little cubicle under there. Very small. I am quite short and I would be just hitting the top of it. And some of the taller astronauts, Jeremy Hansen's big example, may actually struggle. And so they have not just a little door that you can shut. They also have a curtain that you can put over, which is particularly interesting because when you shut the door, they have all of this padding on the walls. And the padding is there to try and limit how loud it is because the toilet is extremely loud, so loud that the astronauts actually have to wear ear protection when they're in there.
Why is it so loud?
Because instead of water, they're using suction.
Oh, okay. So kind of like in an aeroplane when you press flush and it kind of whoop, gets sucked out of the plane and you hear that really loud whooshing sound?
Yes, yes. But also the other issue you have to think about is that we're in no gravity, right? And so to be able to, you know, poo or pee, you have to be able to get it. It's not getting out of your body, but it's making sure that it doesn't, it goes in the place you want it to go.
We don't want another Apollo.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want any more flying poos.
Flying poos, okay.
And so it's actually suctioning the whole time. And that's how you make sure that you don't lose a poo.
Pooping into a vacuum.
Mm.
Okay. There's the toilet and then there's also the rest of the ablutions. How do they bathe?
Oh, they just don't bathe.
What?
Yeah. So for it's only 10 days. I mean, the poor ISS astronauts have to go for 6 months.
But they are there wet wipes?
So what they do have a personal hygiene kit, and that includes, you know, a hairbrush, a toothbrush, liquid soap, dry shampoo, stuff like that. There's not enough water up there for them to be able to have a good clean. But again, it's only 10 days. Worse, actually, for me, is that there's very few sets of clothes up there. So, you know, they're getting into their comfy clothes, but they're wearing like 3 sets of clothes maybe the whole time. And undies are the same. They just kind of wear them until... And again, this is the same as the ISS. You just don't have the space to be able to have a pair of undies every day.
But they can have 5 bottles of hot sauce. Okay.
I don't know if it was bottles of hot sauce. It may be those little sachets.
Righto. Okay. Yeah. All right. I tried a few tortillas for a new pair of jocks. Just me.
NASA astronaut Victor Glover, having completed his exercise, cleaning up in space. Obviously, we do not have showers aboard the Orion spacecraft.
So we've seen astronauts give a couple of press conferences since launch, and it seems like the camera's on in the capsule quite a lot of the time. Do they get any private time to actually have a chat to their family and loved ones back home?
So private time, I think, is an interesting term when you're in a space the same as 2 vans.
Our cosy open plan studio apartment.
Exactly. Uh-huh. I don't think anything is private, even the toilet in this particular situation.
Not when you're hanging out and you've got a curtain around you.
No. So yes, but they are talking to their families. So this morning they had what they call conference calls with all of their families. So they each got to be able to do that, which is lovely. You might say like, hello, how are you going? I'm in space. But I don't think we're having any, you know, saucy conversations or anything too exciting.
Everything stays G-rated.
Yeah.
Nice. Do we know what they do to relax?
I've been trying to work this out. So they do get some time off. There is time between, you know, before they go to sleep where they get to wind down for a bit. There is specified times in there. However, there's not really a lot to do and I couldn't work out what they'd be doing. Probably, I would imagine, staring out the window a lot. What are you going to do apart from look at the view?
Got to make the most of it while you're up there, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're doing all this stuff together in a teeny tiny space for 10 whole days. I think back to my old housemates that I've had over the years, and I find the idea of being trapped in a whole house with them for 10 days hell on Earth. How do we know that the astronauts aren't going to just tear each other to bits once they get up in space? Like, what if someone starts chewing a tortilla with their mouth open?
Firstly, I think that just tells you that you'd be a terrible astronaut, Belinda Smith.
I think there's a few reasons I'd be a bad astronaut. But yes, thanks for just clarifying that. Good.
I would be too. So astronauts are very specifically chosen to be the kind of people that are going to be okay in space for 10 days. I think also it's worth remembering that almost all of these astronauts have done really long stints on the International Space Station. So they've all spent time up to 6 months or longer in space, just hanging out with the same 4 people. And it is a bigger space, but you also can't go outside. You also can't do much. And honestly, it's just the kind of environment where if there was going to be an international incident, you'd really hope that it's not going to be going to the moon. Could you imagine if you had to do an Artemis case daily with Stephen Stockwell?
Murder on the moon. Yeah. Now, we've had a question from Lucy, who's 15, and she asks, you've mentioned multiple times that these astronauts are qualified. What makes someone qualified to leave planet Earth? And what was the selection process? Because surely there would have been hundreds of people on the task force wanting to be in the rocket.
Thanks, Lucy. That was a great question. So not just hundreds, we're talking like thousands of people are applying to be astronauts every year. And there are a few things that you need to have to make sure that you are picked for Artemis II. Commander Reid Wiseman is a computer and systems engineer. He underwent flight and test pilot training via the Navy. And that's pretty similar to pilot Victor Glover. He's got 3 master's degrees and also underwent flight training.
What an overachiever.
Yeah. So this is pretty normal. Like most of them have done flight training via the Navy or the Air Force or things like that. Mission specialist Christina Cook has degrees in electrical engineering and physics. She spent 3.5 years traveling the Arctic and Antarctic regions doing research. And the last one, Jeremy Hansen, our favourite Canadian, was trained as a pilot. He also has the weirdest resume, I think. So he was recruited to be a cave naut and an aquanaut. So a cave naut is someone who trains in a space analog cave environment, and an aquanaut is someone who stays at the bottom of the ocean for 24 hours or longer while exposed to the pressure of the water. So the other thing is that you also have to be within a set of parameters, right? You have to be quite fit, you have to be healthy, you have to have 20/20 vision. You also need to be a certain height. And Jeremy Hansen, funnily enough, is extremely close to that height limit. So he's 6'2", and actually he would not have been able to go on the Apollo missions because they actually had different height limits back then. Their height limit was 5'11".
Wow.
There's not that much space up there. I understand why.
Well, Lucy, I hope that's answered your question and maybe inspired you to apply for Artemis 3 if you fit in all of those. You've got a few master's degrees to get though first.
And if, like Lucy, you've got a question for us, you know what to do. You've got to email sciencefriction@abc.net.au.
Okay, copy. I think we're wrapping this up now. I think we've learned a lot.
This episode was made on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people and was produced by Shelby Traynor. I'm Belinda Smith.
And I'm Jacinta Bowler. Hooroo.